Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Jennifer Cation Armstrong writes about pop culture in books like Seinfeldia and When Women Invented Television. She currently curates and writes the Peabody Finds newsletter, featuring recommendations and media history from the prestigious Peabody Awards in Broadcasting. She is the co-founder of the Ministry of Pop Culture Substack. Her new book, out tomorrow from Dutton, is Parks and Rec, the underdog TV show that literally inspired a vision for a better America.
This town was historically known for two things: widespread obesity and the annual Pawnee Harvest Festival. People from all over Indiana would come and gaze in wonderment at how fat our citizens were. And while they were here, they would also attend the festival. A full week of corn mazes, hay rides, Ferris wheels, pumpkins the size of Jeeps. We lost that festival a few years ago due to another round of budget cuts. And I propose we bring the festival back. With ticket sales and corporate sponsorship, we'll earn all that money back. And believe me, people will come.
What if they don't?
Well, then you eliminate the Parks Department.
And you guys are all on board with this.
Aye.
Yes. Look, we're not just pencil pushers. We are a reflection of the community. And we believe that we can strengthen that community. Because in the end, the reason why we're all here is to bring people together.
Parks and Recreation, created by Greg Daniels and Michael Schur, aired on NBC from 2009 to 2015. The show was always on the brink of cancellation and riding the edge of a new paradigm in the television business, one where no one knew how to count ratings from DVR and ultimately streaming. Starring Amy Poehler, who'd ended a successful run on SNL the same year that the show started, Parks and Recreation showed what passionate, organized humanists in local government can accomplish. During the COVID-19 pandemic, people who had missed its fraught TV tenure discovered the show and wildly binged and re-binged every episode. That, along with the cast, main recurring guest and cameo, and their staying power and project diversity in Hollywood, has solidified the show's place in the sitcom canon. In this conversation, Jennifer and I don't, or barely even mention April, played by Aubrey Plaza.
You ever found a dead body in the trash? Or body parts? Like a torso or a head? Please say head.
And Rashida Jones.
Jogging is the worst, Chris. I mean, I know it keeps you healthy, but God, at what cost?
Andy, Chris Pratt.
There's an old saying in show business, the show must go wrong. Everything always goes wrong, and you just have to deal with it.
Tom Haverford, Aziz Ansari.
Zerts are what I call desserts. Tray-trays or entrees. I call sandwiches Sammy's, Sandoozles, or Adam Sandler's.
Or my forever favorite TV family, the Saperstein's. Dr. Lou, Jean Ralphio.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis.
And Mona Lisa.
Daddy, someone set a fire in your car because you took too long and I got bored. Money, please.
Henry Winkler, Ben Schwartz, and Jenny Slate, respectively. We didn't get to talk about any of the Tammies, and we don't even mention Little Sebastian.
Bye, bye, Little Sebastian. Miss you in the saddest fashion. Bye, bye, Little Sebastian.
But we do get into it, and there's so much more in the book, Parks and Rec, the underdog TV show that literally inspired a vision for a better America. Jennifer Cation Armstrong, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
I want to talk about your career, kind of an overview before we talk about this book specifically, and how you are a journalist with journalistic training. You've maintained a pop culture beat. How do you, the word I'm thinking is defend, but I don't mean defend because I'm also find the arts and television and media incredibly, incredibly important. But how did you find your way here and what have you celebrated about it as you've developed your very prestigious career?
Yeah, I mean, I was always a nerd about it. Like growing up is part of it. You know, it's like this was always there. I'm not sure when it occurred to me that I could do this, though. I read TV Guide as a kid, so like kind of always there. And I was, and this is might end up being a little relevant to our discussion about my book, Parks and Rec, but I was a local newspaper reporter at the beginning of my career. And I am very grateful for that because it was really good training. But, you know, for me, that wasn't like the passion. Like I really mostly just wanted to write long form. Also, you never know how your career is going to go with this stuff. And, I was lucky enough to eventually kind of stumble toward being an assistant at Entertainment Weekly magazine. And that was where like all the magic happened. It changed my life. And I had said even back in college that my dream job was at either Entertainment Weekly or Rolling Stone, because I thought Rolling Stone sounded pretty cool at the
Of course.
time. And yeah, I've always been passionate about it. I think it's important to be passionate about the things that you're writing about, because otherwise it gets real old real fast. And I also do really believe, and this started in my work, even and especially at Entertainment Weekly, I kind of ended up becoming like the social issues person. I did a big cover story on like gay teens on television. So I really was always interested in not just like the I definitely like actually don't care about gossip. I really am interested in both the artistic process, but also even more so the social impact. And so even when I choose books now, choose books up topics, my rule has always been, there could be a perfectly fun, lovely show that doesn't really have like a bigger impact on the world. And kind of, I always think of it as like, did it actually change people's lives? And I try to find those parts in every single book that I write. So that is really, think of how much we're saturated in media now. You can't say that it's irrelevant, right? You can't say it's just for fun, because we're like, it's affecting our brains all the time. It was weird that it took us so long to kind of recognize that. I think for like even the early parts of my career at Entertainment Weekly, people were kind of like, ugh, why do you do that stupid thing? I'll tell you a very brief story, which is just that I was at a Paris Review party once in New York City when I worked at Entertainment Weekly. And some guy asked me where I worked, and I said it. And he goes, "Oh, who are you endorsing in the presidential election?" Like, obviously, that was like a dig. And I was like, just because we don't endorse in the presidential election doesn't mean, like, I mean, we'll get to it, but Parks and Rec is a classic example of an Obama era work. It embodies everything about that. And so, you can watch it on one level or another, but it's there.
It is a deeply funny show with so much heart that came out, as you said, during the Obama era and had its heart on its sleeve, its sentimentality, its commitment to community. And you write in your introduction, Parks and Rec shows us that caring people in local government can make lives better. And this book will show you how caring people in television can make lives better too. Every time that I read about or hear an interview with Mike Schur, I feel like I'm going to cry because he seems unreal, like an unbelievably good boss, creative person, and loving humanist. You got to talk to him for the book. He gave you a great blurb for the book. Tell us about Mike Schur.
It all started with him. This came from, I work for the Peabody Awards in Media,
Very cool.
and we like to say the prestigious Peabody Awards in Media, and I write their newsletter and work on their podcast. And I interviewed him for the newsletter. I had no idea how fateful that was going to be. He's great, and I knew that, but like honestly, it was one of the best interviews ever for me. And as we've talked about, I've done a lot. I've done many of them with famous and famous adjacent people.
You probably did at least 20 for this book, maybe
Yeah,
more than that. I'm
that's
trying to like
right.
estimate the number of names, and it's got to be up there.
Absolutely. I should count just so I can like brag about that later. But yeah, it was so, he was so deep, and he said so many things that like, I mean, I liked Parks and Rec, sure, it's great. But when we talked about that show, like I was very excited to talk to him about The Good Place at that time. It had been, I think maybe it was still on or just recently ended. And I was so just into that show. Like, I just thought it was, I think he, that, I'm gonna, I also say that's his masterpiece. It's perfect. Parks and
That's the
Rec was
show.
a work in progress a lot of the
That's
time.
a TV show that did do the rare thing for me of me loving it so much that I did listen to the Companion podcast and was like, couldn't get enough. And they had everybody who worked on the show on that podcast, costume designers, producers, editors, writers. It was so fantastic.
A lot of
All
the
right.
same people from Parks and Rec, by the
Of
way,
course.
behind the
Yes, indeed.
scenes. And like he just was so smart. Not everybody is good at talking about their work. some people are and some aren't. He really was. And he said so many things that made me see Parks and Rec differently and made me understand that it did have exactly what I was just talking about, which is like an actual social message and impact. And that was when I was like, wait, is this a book? So I was able to go back to him and just say, like, would you be into this? Because I don't want to do it without you. And that's really why it happened. And I say that, like, honestly, I don't mean to like single people out. They're all incredible. It's truly was like such an honor to talk to every single person involved in this, particularly the sort of core people that I'm thinking of is like Mike Schur, Greg Daniels, who was the who adapted The Office for America and then was co-creator on the show, Amy Poehler.
Hoes before bros. Uteruses before deuteruses.
Got it.
Ovaries before brovaries.
And Nick Offerman.
Bully.
It truly was like a spiritual experience to talk to these people, mainly because of them and how great they are. And it's also because they are like, to a person, people would say, like, I'm talking to you because I just love talking about this show.
Yeah.
Like, it all together is just this cosmic thing that happened. And what's crazy is like it wasn't even that big a hit when it was on originally, and it's sort
It
of
was
like
on the brink of cancellation
I can
the whole time
always
virtually. Yeah.
always and I think at least part of the reason, I mean part of the reason they lasted is simply because of the benevolence, I guess we must say, of NBC. We don't say that all the time,
It kind
but
of seems
like
like also they, from the book, NBC didn't know what else to do.
yes,
It's
that's
like
correct.
you don't know what you have and you don't know what you need. And thank goodness this show benefited from that lack of insight, I suppose.
They even tried. There's one bit in the book where, like, NBC does in fact go like, all right, we're gonna put this other show on. Like, we're gonna try this different show because this Parks and Rec, like, I'm trying to think of how to explain it, but 30 Rock dwarfed Parks and Rec, and 30 Rock was not a hit.
No, 30 Rock
Like,
is still like, I mean, people again, like with
it's
streaming and
great.
everything, a lot more people have seen it now. But yeah, it wasn't doing numbers when it was on the
No,
air. And it should
like
have been
Tina.
because it's so funny.
It's so good. And this too. I mean, Tina Fey made jokes repeatedly about like the only reason we're still on is because of the Emmys. But even 30 Rock was like a massive hit compared to Parks and Rec. But the fact is, as you kind of said, like they tried this one other show once and then they were just like, nope, never mind. This show called Outsourced.
Which
Nope,
had great people in it. It
ew,
wasn't, you know.
it did. Just didn't quite work. And they put Parks and Rec back on the air because that didn't work. And it's kind of a, and I don't mean devil in a bad way here, it's like a devil you know situation for NBC, where they're like, it was a weird time in TV. It was really transitional. I know it's an even weirder time now, but this was right when like DVRs were becoming pretty mainstream. No one knew how to count audiences. And we weren't into streaming really yet. But cable was encroaching on network and everyone was freaking out. So like just knowing, like, okay, you know what? It's not a ton of people, but we're gonna get a couple million for Parks and Rec, and we know that there are people who love it. So like, let's just do that because at least it's not gonna like really mess us up. That's sort of TV is often just like a risk game, and so, but as you know, like the driving force of the sort of story of my book is this fact that every single season they were like, we don't know if we're gonna get back on the air, and they were always doing like crazy stuff, both story-wise and just like behind the scenes to try to like get another season or save money. Like there's so many like kind of antics that go on behind the scenes in a good way, for them to just keep this thing going one way or another. And it's really fun because it so mirrors the show where it's
Yeah.
like, these great people who are very good at their jobs, who love each other, just try. They really just wanted to keep. Can you blame them? They really wanted to keep hanging out. And
They say that so many times. It's
yeah, they
like
really.
Adam Scott says at one point we were like, jumping out of bed and running to work,
Wasn't
which is
that
like
so? I loved that. I loved when he was. I mean, I think I even allude to it at one point because I had to, that like he really got me because, I mean, this is true of many of them, but he was very emotional about that. Like he had this like dreamy, far off look in his eyes when he was talking about this stuff, where he was just like, man, it was great.
Yeah.
And you're like,
And
are you okay now?
his star is, huge, 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 huge now.
Yeah.
But I remember, so this, it's too cool for me to not share this. So I try not to, insert myself in people's interviews, but I want to tell you
Please.
that I was already a fan of Party Down, which Adam Scott had starred on,
Yeah.
when he showed up for those last two episodes of the second season of Parks and Rec. And then that summer, he did a script reading at Vassar that I attended, and I ran into him in the hallway, and I was like, "Great job. I'm so glad you're on Parks and Rec." And he was like, "Me too." And then
Oh.
I would like have that. It's a moment in time, but like what a one for how much the show
Right?
has meant to me and so many people.
It's what's also crazy is like every single person who comes up when I do interviews about this, I'm like, oh my God, I love them. Like, I really fell in love with Adam Scott in this process. Between that and like Severance being on, me being very, very into that. I'm also just blown away. Like, I think he's an unbelievable actor. Like the idea that you could be in Parks and Rec and Severance is incredible. And he just the way he sells some of the stuff, like the reason I think you care so much. I mean, also we care about Amy, but like when he shows up, he has a real leading man energy. I've told friends this who like didn't believe me at first, and then there'd be times they're like, oh no, I see it now. Like there's times he did it on Severance too. He does this like move where he like sweeps his love interest like up to him to kiss them, and I'm just like, ah, oh, he can really, and the way he sells his admiration for Leslie is just
He feels like he knows what love is, and that
that's
matters.
correct. That's so, and he also feels like he likes women.
Yeah,
You know what I
that's very
mean? You
much.
know, I don't mean like he's straight. I mean
I know what
like
you mean.
this is a, I make this distinction about male stars sometimes, like this is a man who like likes women in addition to being attracted to them, and I can feel
As
it
though they are people.
as if they are
Interesting.
people.
He also on The Good Place plays a demon, and he's so vile. He's so deplorable and gross on that, and it's also an amazing move.
You're, but that's something about him
Yeah.
too that's fascinating. I mean, he
You're
doesn't
still
do it as
laughing.
much anymore, but he did it in Dumb and Dumber, I think, too, where like he can play a
Step
terrible,
Brothers. In Step Brothers, he's a real.
terrible jerk. That's it. That's the
Yeah.
one I'm thinking of. He can play a real jerk, and you totally believe that too. So it's just very interesting. And I do, but I do think he can play the romantic lead here because like there's such an everyman quality to him. He isn't Rob Lowe, you know, and that is the entire point of him is that he's very cute. But he's, you feel, we all feel like he's our boyfriend. And that, like, I'm like, no, but if he knew me, he would really
Right.
like me. I'm pretty sure about
Right.
it.
I'm like, our eyes are the same color. Does that mean
Yeah,
anything?
I think that means something. I think
And
so.
that color, it's brown. Like, what am I talking about? I was thinking about how during the run of Parks and Rec, a very different governmental television show with a female lead debuted, which was Veep. Incredibly cynical, also hilarious.
Also incredibly funny.
So good, but sometimes, it has more cringe where you're like, I think this is really what it's like in DC, and I'm sick.
In fact, I mean, you're making me think about a couple things, including like, I was like, is there an essay in this? But it's so, because I've thought about it a lot, like, I've
I'm sure.
obviously, because it is interesting that like both of them existed in the same time. And I actually do believe and have said before that like these two women who are the leads of those two, you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Amy are like the funniest people working today, something like that, who are also really, really both very good people, which is so interesting. I
And
mean, I
they
don't know for
also
sure, but I'm pretty sure.
love and care about and celebrate female friendships. I mean,
That's,
it does seem
isn't
like
it weird?
they pass the Bechdel test in their personal lives, if not in every project.
Yeah, and they both have like the only two celebrity podcasts I like. It's like a weird parallel, and it's weird to think of like Veep and Parks and Rec in the same universe. And what I would posit that I just thought of now is that like they're two sides of like kind of the same coin. It's like maybe the point is that at the local level, which is something I've been talking about so much with this book, like I truly believe that like the local level saves us right now. This is where it's at. It's real community. It's where the politicians have to see their constituents at the grocery store, and they solve the problems that are real for people, like fixing roads or water main breaks, right? This is where stuff gets done because it doesn't matter what your political differences are when your water main is broke.
Right, filling a pit.
Right? Like that's just true. And so like, but in DC, like you can have all of this other nonsense because they're sort of removed and it's all about power. So, I kind of believe both visions, I kind of think both can be true. And it is really interesting, like the parallels between those two. And they're both like single women, in office trying to make it work. I would really, really love to see a conversation between those two characters.
Yeah,
Be very interesting.
that would be interesting. I don't think Selena would do it.
No,
Well, maybe
no.
with Leslie as the head of parks, maybe. Well,
Maybe, maybe. I like, those episodes that I do talk about in the book where they go to DC. I would love like a run-in
yeah.
in the hallway between those two, the way that Leslie ran into Michelle Obama, and freaked out.
Are you nodding because you agree with me?
Yes, I do agree with you. I agree with you on all things throughout history until the end of time forever.
Maybe Leslie would like charm Selena unexpectedly because she would like admire her.
She would.
And she
She
would
would.
say, and she'd know like all of her career stats. And she'd be like, I have your picture in my office. And then suddenly Selena would, because she's a narcissist, would be
Oh my
like,
God.
I am kind of great, aren't I? You should admire me. Like, I think it could work. I think it could definitely work.
Our guest is Jennifer Cation Armstrong. Her new book, Parks and Rec, the underdog TV show that literally inspired a vision for a better America, will be out tomorrow. It is published by Dutton. You devote some time, which I very much enjoyed, to Parks and Rec's treatment of the Fourth Estate, of the media, the characters they
My
have.
obsession.
It's so, I mean, it's just so fun. It's so identifiable. Some of it's, parody leaning, but it's just tremendous.
I really think this is so important. I mean, it's interesting how early they even introduced this. This is like before the show's good. We all admit that like season one is wonky. But they have Shaun Umarwa Tweep right up in there from the get-go. And
A classic Mike Schur character name.
great, unbelievable character name. And so fully realized, she said this, the Alison Becker who played her said this to me, like, she was like, it's weird how, like I could have just been this random, the joke is that she's sleeping with Mark Brendanowitz, who Leslie has a crush on. But she's like, I feel like I came in and it was already so fully fleshed out. Like she has this crazy name. Like they thought about this thing a lot. And then from there, of course, we get to, I think in season two is when we get to like Purd.
Hello, I'm Purd Hapley, and welcome to You Heard with Purd. Today's show begins now.
And Joan Calamezzo from the local cable station.
And I am legendary newswoman Joan Calamezzo, newly single.
Who I think are a lot more, I mean, they're parodies of just like on-air personalities in general. And I would say is they may be hinting a little more at like national cable news kind of things, right? Like Perd's whole joke is just that he is never saying anything, but he's saying it with great authority.
He's saying it so well.
Yeah, exactly. And he's one of my favorites, just side note, like he's played by Jay Jackson, and that was one of my favorite interviews actually, not just because Perd is amazing, but also because Jay was a news guy. Like for years, he says something great in the book, like it used to be that if I showed up, like someone was dead or whatever. Like it was like he did serious news, so he could just bring this like delivery that he had learned to Purd saying absolutely nothing. And then Joan is just like a legend. I mean, she's such a diva character, right? That she's just like she cannot grasp that she's just at a local station, right? She thinks she's like a national news figure,
Yeah,
and
big
got
fish,
like
small pond.
dresses and the hair and all of that stuff. Though Mo Collins, who plays her, said to me, I was like, do you think she knows? And she's like, oh, she knows. Like, she knows that she's actually not that big a deal. And so she has to do something to, and why is she drunk all the time? Like,
Well, maybe because she didn't get to where she wanted to
because she
be in
didn't
life.
get to where she wanted to be, but she wants to believe that she's so much more. this is where they really start to build out this world, and many have compared it to The Simpsons. And I think a huge part of when they figure out the show is that they figure out that Leslie isn't stupid or incompetent. She's actually hyper competent. And it's her against the whole town, right? Except she doesn't see it that way. She sees it as I'm helping them. But like, she is just constantly encountering completely insane people.
Okay, here's the situation. We are operating on a shoestring budget. Park services have been slashed, but we are all still here. And we have a job to do.
Make the world's biggest pizza.
No, make this town fun for the people who live here.
Fine, but after that, the pizza is our top priority.
No, it's not.
We're getting pizza?
Big cartoon characters who are
care
in
about
her
one
way.
Thing.
They care about one
Don't
thing.
Don't care about anything.
Right. And the beauty becomes that it's about how this character cares so much that she doesn't say like, ugh, this person, you know, she does say that sometimes, but behind the scenes, but like she still helps everyone. Like the idea is in the end, no matter how weird or silly or stupid these people are, my job is to help them. And also my job is to deal with this media the way it is. It's, I can't, you know, I have a theory that Shauna Mollway Tweep maybe is doing a good job. She might, we don't know. We don't see her coverage.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but now that you mention it, I think I always thought she was.
Yeah. I think she might be holding it down.
It's annoying when the media comes and makes you accountable for things.
Right. Right. I mean, that first encounter is actually one of the best ones, the one that she has with Leslie over the park.
Now, when the reporter gets here, it is vital that we all follow my rules about how to deal with the media. Rule number one, stay on message. This is key. All we need to talk about is the pit and the fact that we're going to turn it into a park. And that's it. Okay? Number two, what? Stay on message again? Yes. It's that important.
Where it's like Leslie is so losing her mind. She's so nervous that she's getting press attention all of a sudden. And she just like says all kinds of stuff that makes no sense. She's super defensive and weird. And I loved that. I love that. And I was a local newspaper reporter. So like I do, like there was something about Shauna showing up for me that early where I was like, well, this show isn't perfect, but I'm loving this. And Shauna's like, Shauna's one sort of like vice is that she just dates every eligible man at City Hall that she can. But like, where is she supposed to meet men other than that?
At the Snake Hole Lounge.
I actually just had a thought, which is I feel like she should have dated Tom. But we did learn, and maybe people do not remember this because maybe they haven't watched the pandemic special as much as I have, but because it isn't available for streaming anywhere. But she does end up with Paul Rudd's character. She marries Paul Rudd's character. So I say she did great.
That. Yeah. He
so
is.
She's Shauna Mollway Tweep Newport.
Yeah, she's fine.
So she's fine.
Plus he's so dear.
Ugh.
I mean, he's an
even,
idiot.
Even the villains. One of the sort of jokes to me about this show is like every single person who shows up in a villain mode within like two episodes, you're like, oh.
Yeah. He's well, great. Or they're like, so funny. You're like, right. Catherine Hahn.
Oh, she's the only one who but we love her. Like, but she does maintain her edge, I would say. She's not really a villain per se. Actually, she's kind of like when she gets Ben a job, you know, she's kind of benevolent in the end. She's just.
She knows what she knows.
A different vibe than Pawnee is used to.
I wish that we could talk about this forever, obviously, as you can tell.
I know, I could too.
Parks and Rec, the underdog TV show that literally inspired a vision for a better America, is published by Dutton and written by the fantastic Jennifer Cation Armstrong. I always love speaking with you. I loved going back to Pawnee for this book. And of course, we'll be launching a rewatch any minute now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Parks and Rec, the underdog TV show that literally inspired a vision for a better America, by Jennifer Cation Armstrong, comes out tomorrow wherever books are sold or borrowed. It's published by Dutton. Parks and Recreation is available to stream on Peacock. And Jennifer and I are available to talk about it whenever you want. Hit us up.
I'm sorry, Shauna. I think I need to go. But thank you so much. And as always, everything I said is off the record, okay? Bye.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.